This is Phil Farron, and I am driving home. It's Thursday today. Not coming in tomorrow, unless there's a problem. So far this week, things have been putting along pretty well. Had a few little challenges this week that we had to kind of work our way through that just seemed like they were a little harder than they needed to be. But sometimes it's like that. I have actually lost track of what number this is. I see if it's 355, 356. I don't know. It's in there somewhere. I'll label it right when I get it uploaded. It's been a good week. Good week. Haven't quite got as much writing done as I would like, but you know, the week is not over yet, so if I have a good session this evening, and oh, that's right, but Friday is going to be torn up, because I have to make more sauerkraut on Friday. I don't know, we're going to, you know, if I can get to 7,500 words this week, I'll be happy. So I'm approaching, I think I'm like at page 280 or so of the new book. And they come in at about 400, a little over 400. So I'm closing in on it. And things are starting to align. You know, I think I mentioned last time that sometimes you get into the midst of it and all, you've got all the balls up in the air and you're trying to figure out which one you're going to catch first and how you're going to, you know, get them all back down to the ground in a satisfying way. And it's just fascinating. It's just fascinating how this process of interaction and creativity, how you know, when you're programming, there's certain kind of basic design principles that you use of reuse and clarity of code and those types of things. You know, typically you try not to do double negatives in your logic, and they're just some kind of good basic design principles that you use that are pretty easy to understand and then fairly easy to embrace. And so you can just look at it and go, oh, okay, this would be better if we did XYZ. Done and done. Easy. With writing, it's a lot subjective. And I guess I have certain writing principles that I try to adhere to that maybe account for some of the rewriting, some of the editing that I do. But there's other stuff that is just flat. It's more than preferences. It's the crafting of that story and the storyline. And that's where things really get interesting, because I can write a perfectly acceptable passage and then I look at it and think, yeah, but I don't want it there. You know, there's just something that's telling me that's not the best place for that. And then I'm thinking, well, true. And so I kind of move it out someplace else, but then that collapses two other passages next to each other. And then you look at that and go, no, you really need a bridge there. You need something that's going to cut away for a while and so you can come back to it. And, or you're going to have to rewrite a bunch of that stuff. And then it really needs to happen in the past because you just feel like that would be better told in a reflection than told in present time. It, you know, it's all that stuff. And it's just fascinating to watch how all that stuff shifts and bounces around. And then when it's all said and done, hopefully, you get to the place where you think, yeah, that makes sense. It's just really interesting to watch that process. So it's fun. You know, it's fun. I'm hopefully into that stage where, you know, stuff writes pretty fast, because my time has been getting hammered recently. Just with, oh, got that to take care of. Oh, got that to take care of. You know, oh, got that to take care of. And it, not all, well, really, none of it is bad things. I mean, none of it's all stuff that I don't mind doing, I enjoy doing, but it's all just little things here and there that just take a little bit of time. And that's okay. So yeah, the writing is going fine. I still don't know quite how all the balls are going to land, but we'll figure that out as we go. I do have to take a little detour today. It's going to be interesting to see how this works out. I bought a car last Friday. Spent all of $500 big for it. It's a 1996 Toyota Tercel. The young lady who's coming to live with us for a while, she really needed a car, and I was looking around. I didn't intentionally go out looking for a $500 car for her, but that's where we ended up. It was originally a $1,500 car that after the mechanic looked at it and went, nah, it runs, you know, it runs fine, but leaks everywhere. And so he said, I wouldn't give more than about $300 or $400 for it. So I went back to them and said, you know, this is what the mechanic is saying, you know, sorry. So offered them $500 and they said, yeah, okay. But it doesn't have any seatbelt buckles. So I've ordered those. Those are coming in. I'm hoping they're going to come in today because tomorrow morning, first thing, I need to get that car into Walmart and just have Walmart add, you know, do an oil change on it, add fluids where needed, and all that kind of stuff. And, which means that if those buckles aren't in this evening, I'm going to be driving that car back into town at 60 miles an hour with no seat belts, which I'm not really fond of driving a car at 60 miles an hour with no seat belts. But, you know, it'll be okay. It'll be okay. I have it on record here. If it's not okay, I love you all deeply and I'm grateful to be in your life. And hopefully that won't be the last message you hear. Anyways, had a lot of good conversations with friends this week. Had breakfast with a friend and then had a Skype call with another friend in the evening. Heard a little more about his story. Fascinating story. Wow, fascinating story. And then had another breakfast with a friend this morning. And just good times. Good times. Just really, really makes my life rich. I am rich in friends. Wow. I have invested and it is paying dividends. Good friends. So anyways, I do need to just, I'm going to swing in past Walmart to see when they open their tire and lube in the morning so that I can be there first thing, do my grocery shopping while they're doing that, and then run over to my mom and dad's and get their car and bring it back over and do some grocery shopping for them. And then I have to get Harum so I can do the cabbage. And then gotta replace door handles. Okay, it looks like Saturday is 7 to 7. So I gotta be here at 7 a.m. tomorrow. Monday through Friday is 7 to 7. 7 a.m. Gotta be here. So, you know, tomorrow is going to be a busy day. It'll be interesting to see if I can get everything done and if I can actually get the car all the way back into town to get all the fluids changed. And then I had started the car yesterday, the little Toyota Corolla, and it started right up. I mean, it was beautiful. Started right up. Everything was fine. And then I was checking to make sure the headlights worked because I'm going to try to get it licensed tomorrow as well, so it has to pass. And I had the headlights on and I think I hit the windshield wipers or something. The car just died. I went, well, that's weird. So started it back up, and it was going, but it was kind of sputtering a little bit as it was going. Now press on the gas, it would rev up, it would be fine. So we'll see how this works out. Like I said, you know, we spent $500 on it. Probably a little more by the time we get all the little parts and things put on it. And they tell me you can take cars to junkyards for, you know, and get $200 or $300. So, you know, I mean, we're going to be down most at $500 when we get rid of this car. It's going to be okay. Anyways, I had mentioned a couple of weeks ago, after I told my dramatic story, or some would say gross dramatic story, or just plain gross story last week, I had mentioned that I had seen two videos out of a three-part series that were called The Long Game. You can find them on, it's from Delve, I think it's called. Delve is the name of the channel. And the videos are called The Long Game. And he had done these two, and then there was like a big gap, and then he had done the third. And the first two I thought were interesting. They are about things that I had heard before. And the basic idea, and he's got some really cool examples, and they're worth listening to, but the basic idea is that when you see people who are outliers, when you see people who have come out of nowhere and achieved success, if you will, in fact, go look back at their history, you will find that there was a lot of time when they were honing their craft, when nobody knew who they were, and they were just working and working and working and working. And he actually at one point said, people will say, well, what about Tiger Woods? He achieved such great success so early in life. And he said, well, yeah, that's true. But you have to understand that Tiger Woods started really early. So he had that 10 years or 12 years of just honing his skills before he achieved a certain level of ability. That's all true. That's all true. It's easy to conclude from listening to those types of things that therefore the formula for success is, if I just hone my craft and hone my craft and hone my craft and hone my craft, that obviously then I'll be successful because I'm on that path. But there's a logic problem in that. Just because someone who honed their craft for 10 years is successful doesn't mean that if you hone your craft for 10 years, you will be successful as well, because there are a lot of different factors that go into success. Not the least of which is a certain measure of luck or random chance being at the right place at the right time. And I can look back on my life and see that, in fact, I was at the right place at the right time in those things that I have been successful at. Now, one of the things that's interesting about my life is I have gotten above the ground noise and achieved some measure of national recognition on two different fronts, completely different fronts, one in computer programming, one in writing. And in both of those, I was at the right place at the right time. So that's a little, you know, a little harder to explain than random chance, but that's okay. I could understand how some people would just say random chance. So the first two talks on The Long Game, they were fine. They documented some stuff. They were interesting to listen to. It was fun. About a year later, this guy did another talk, and it was The Long Game Part 3. And he talked about Vincent van Gogh, and he mentioned a word in the talk that I had never heard before. And I thought, hey, I have talked about that, but I didn't know that word. And so I thought, well, there you go. That's the word I was looking for. So anyways, he starts out talking about fireflies in Brazil. And you're thinking, what? I thought you were going to talk about Van Gogh. But he starts out talking about these Brazilian fireflies that are apparently big and they're luminous. And he said one of the things that people either used to do or still do is women would catch them and very carefully put pins through them without killing them, and then they'd fasten them to their hair and the clothes, you know, and to kind of decorate themselves at night, you know, and they would have like this living jewelry that flicker and flash, and you know, it's cool stuff. And he said, you know, you can look at those fireflies and you can come up with their brilliance and how people are attracted to them. And he said, you've got kind of the usual advice that people give artists. And that is that you got to get out there and you got to have a Twitter account. You got to tweet a lot. You know, you got to get on Facebook. You got to push. And I have a buddy who's trying that approach right now. And he's had some success, which is fabulous. You know, I mean, he just writes as much as he can write. And he gets out there and pushes his books and suggests people buy them. And, you know, I personally have a little different approach, but that's just fine. If anyone's going to get successful, he's probably going to get successful a lot sooner than I am, because I'm not pushing. I'm not trying to get above the ground noise. I'm just sitting in my basement and writing. What's interesting is that this guy in this video, The Long Game Part 3, actually says that Van Gogh had a different approach than all that push stuff. He said in the 9th year of his career as a painter, he had yet to sell a single painting. He had been painting for a decade without an audience. Now, I can't quite say that about me because I have beta readers. What I do say about me is that I don't write for millions or hundreds of thousands or even hundreds. I write for dozens because I typically have about 40 beta readers. So, you know, it's like 3 dozen people I write for. And that's fine. That's all I care about. Because if my writing in some way can make people think about their life or can in some way make them consider other things they might not have considered, if it can make them pause at all and be reflective, done. It's worth it. It's worth it to me, especially because I derive such joy out of it. More on that in a moment. And Van Gogh, he actually, I guess, according to this video, had started painting late. He didn't know anything about anatomy. He didn't know anything about perspective. He finds himself a mentor. The mentor is unimpressed. You know, money's a problem. His diet and his health suffer because he got no money. He gets a perspective device, and that helps a little. He has to move back in with mom and dad. You know, there's all this pressure. Just give up. And instead of giving up, he starts working twice as hard, learning to paint faces, learning about colors. During a really hard, depressed winter, he actually creates, I guess, what is considered to be one of his well-known works called The Potato Eaters. So you've got this guy, and he's just working and working and working and working, and it's extremely prolific. I knew that didn't sound right. Prolific. That's like something I am. Prolific, because he paints over like 1,000 oil paintings in his lifetime. Now that you pause that and you go over to this other guy, he mentions this other guy who wrote a book. I have no idea how to pronounce this guy's name. Mihail Shizikabalahalahali. I don't know. It's literally, it's Czikzentmihaly. And the book was called Flow, The Psychology of Optimal Experience. This is where the word comes from. It comes from this book, and the word is autotelic. A-U-T-O-T-E-L-I-C. Autotelic. It refers to a self-contained activity, one that is not done with the expectation of future benefit, but simply because the doing itself is the reward. An autotelic experience is done for its own sake, not because of the consequences. So Van Gogh, he's bombing along, and then he discovers color. And he just starts working on a theory of color, and he just goes like crazy figuring out colors and all this kind of stuff. And in 1936, after 10 years, he actually sells a painting. But there's no celebration. He just goes back to work. And he just works and works and works and works and works. And at some point in there, someone writes to him and says, you should take a little time to kind of enjoy this celebration, enjoy the fact you sold a painting, and that, your fame is growing and it's good. And he writes back something that really is very, very good. For those who wish to make art, for the experience of making art, for those whom the making of art is autotelic, he wrote back and he said, there are fireflies that are so luminous that in the evenings ladies stick them into their hair with pins. It's very fine fame, but see, it is to the artist what the hairpin is to those insects. You want to succeed and shine. Do you really know what you want? That's pretty good, especially for somebody who was having mental problems, for someone who is struggling as much as Van Gogh struggled in life, to understand that there are constraints that come with fame, to understand that fame is never like that which you dream it will be. For it brings with it the demands of all the people who now feel like they own a piece of you, or they are entitled to a piece of you. At this point, I'm just plowing through writing these books, and I have had people say to me, and I have made comments about George Martin, I think is his name. Sorry. I think, I should know his name, George Martin. I think George Martin, who is doing the Game of Thrones stuff, and how he's missed his latest deadline. And I think is very much in that mindset of the famous quote, I can't remember who said it, but writers are those for whom writing is more difficult than for everybody else. I can relate to that. You got to plow through stuff. You have a much higher standard. I have found and seen that if I just keep pounding out the words, that stuff will happen. And so I just do that. I'm getting my mail. One moment. Oh, there's a box here. Oh, no. It's my wife's essential oils. So that is not the belt buckles. One moment. Oh, oh, don't fall. Don't fall. Because then I'm going to have to open the door. Don't fall. I think that's a replacement. My wife had gotten some essential oils in, and one of them had leaked. And that's not the buckles either. Well, maybe the buckles didn't come today. I may be driving in tomorrow. Ooh, without seat belts. Gotta be done. Gotta be done. But I pound along. I keep writing without the pressures of that fame. I don't have people looking over my shoulder and thinking, well, how many words have you written today? Well, you know, are you going to make your deadlines? Well, what's, you know, I don't have that. I'm backing into my garage. And so it really, at the end of the day, I can't tell what he's going through and what isn't happening in his life. So, you know, it's just, it is presumptuous of me to assume that I would be different if I was that famous, which I'm not, which is not a bad thing, because I could just sit in my little room. This guy finished up the this talk by saying, artists who only know, he's something about Van Gogh. I didn't get the beginning part of the sentence. Sorry. Artists who only know it is up to them to do their work. In our world, the external outcomes are valued more than anything else. Will we still make our art if no one is watching? And I would say, I'm still going to make my art whether anyone is watching yet, because I have found that place of joy. I have found that expression in my life that for me is autotelic. And I think that's a really cool word. And as soon as I heard it, I thought, oh, I got to do a podcast on that. And I would recommend that everybody in their lives find that thing that there doesn't have to be a consequence for, that you do it because you love it. And you do it because it is that thing that brings you joy. And I think you can't find that thing unless it has certain qualities. And we've talked about those before. It is that thing that only you can do. It is that thing that nobody can stop you from doing. It is that thing that if you do not do it, there will be a gap in the world. And it's something creative where you're bringing something into the world that would not exist. This is Phil Ferrand, and I have made it home.